Gail Carriger is the New York Times best-selling author of the Parasol Protectorate series, comprising of the novels Soulless, Changeless, and soon-to-be-released Blameless. The novels star Alexia Terabatti, one of the most independent and strong-willed women characters you'll ever come across inhabiting a novel set in Victorian England. The novels also accommodate werewolves, vampires, and ghosts in a time where the supernatural are part of a high society. I'm Maddie Frick, and Gail joins me now on Real Good Words. Welcome, Gail.
Hi, thank you for having me on.
Let me just start by saying that I absolutely love your books. They're some of the best I've read all summer.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Now, I find the main character, Alexia Terabatti, a refreshing character to read about because she's got this individuality during a historical period where that isn't exactly the norm. I also appreciate reading about a strong female character despite her lacking confidence in her appearance. For some reason, that's reassuring to me. Could you talk about Alexia's character?
Sure, I'd be happy to. I came up with the idea of Alexia by actually reading into some of the lesser-known independent women of that time period. So while the Victorian era does really lack in strong women just because of the way the society was arranged, there were these quirky women who had a stroke of independence in that time period, and they were often widows or older spinsters, quite a bit older than I made Alexia, but they did exist. There were a few of them, and in particular, I was thinking about the famous traveler and explorer named Amelia B. Edwards, who was this crazy independent lady who decided that she was going to travel the Nile River up and down in Egypt at the time. And Egypt at the time was a pretty scary place to go, especially for a woman. And of course, she had her entourage and her companion and all that kind of thing. But she did decide to take off and explore the world as a very proper, well-brought-up Victorian woman. And she wrote about her travels. And that journal sparked the Victorian imagination about ancient Egypt and about antiquities collecting and kind of sparked the intellectual revolution in England towards archaeology and anthropology, which is where my background is. And so I did a lot of research. I read her journals and read about her personality. And so Alexia is kind of based off of her and that spirit of individuality that a few, I think, lucky Victorian women managed to get a hold of and develop in themselves. And then her weaknesses. I really wanted Alexia to be a character that was, I mean, this is a fantasy world, but I wanted her to have some realistic components and to be somebody that people could really relate to. So I didn't want her to be kind of a superhero. I didn't want her to be all powerful. I wanted her to have her own doubts and have her own issues and problems and concerns. And as the series progresses, Alexia is definitely a creature of her time period. She's a little prejudiced and a little bigoted against, you know, certain income levels and that kind of thing. So she certainly has her flaws, and one of them is, to her own perception, that, you know, her skin is really dark for the Victorians. She's kind of an olive-complected Mediterranean woman, which in a time period where very pale skin was highly valued is a major flaw. And so that's kind of one of the things that she's concerned with her appearance. And I know that seems superficial, but she's a real person to me, and I tried to put that onto the page.
I like the quality of the descriptions of the vampires and the werewolves. Could you describe these characters?
Well, I stuck these two elements into Victorian society, but I tried to make them as scientific as possible. So I didn't allow myself any magic in my universe, but I did allow myself to look at the Victorian era's take on the supernatural and their beliefs and their sort of scientific exploration of the supernatural as real. So in other words, if you look at the world that I've built with the idea that the Victorian science of the day actually worked rather than our modern perspective on that science as very flawed indeed, you can really see that these elements like a werewolf or a vampire would fit into that concept of the world. And so I tend to describe and put these characters into that world in the same kind of way. So to me, vampires would have fit into Victorian society. They would have been the snobbiest of the snobby. They would have been ruling fashion, and they would have been the playboys and the dandies of the night, for which in that time period there was a lively nightlife and theater district and all that sort of thing. And I could easily see vampires kind of playing in that world. And similarly, I built the werewolf characters into the military side of the Victorian era, which again seems startlingly adapted to having a kind of werewolf pack dynamic as part of the British regimental army system. And so they kind of comfortably fit into those worlds. And then I took what I knew of the types of people that inhabited those worlds and then imagined what it would be like if they were immortal and had to live a very long time, and how certain aspects of a personality would be exaggerated but into quirkiness, simply because if you're an immortal trying to cope with different concerns about life or living forever and not having the prospect of mortality, you're going to be interested in and distracted by kind of different things, I think, than us mortal folk are. And so I can make my vampires even more outrageously interested in fashion to the exclusion of all else. And my werewolves even more into sort of the artistic side of life and into the military side of life and into strategy and that kind of a thing. I hope that addresses your question, but that's the approach I was taking.
Yeah. Why didn't you want to include elements of magic in your books?
I didn't want to give myself an easy out. I'm not saying that other writers use magic as an escape, but it seems to me that the kind of writer that I am, if I gave my main character magic or her friends or something, that it would be something that if she got trapped into a situation, she could just use magic to get out of that situation rather than having to use her intellect and her knowledge of science. And she's a bit of a blue stocking, so some of her background reading that she's done, and I wanted her to be challenged in that way. And so I didn't want to be able to use magic to escape, but I also was really interested in the scientific kind of steampunk side of writing in this time period. And so I wanted to give Alexia like kind of a 007 future where she was going to have the Victorian version of gadgets and steampunk tools that she could play with. She has a sort of souped-up parasol starting in the second book and going on through the rest of the series. It's a little bit like the Swiss Army knife of parasols that has all these secret pockets and secret things it can do. And I just thought that that would be a kind of a more unique and fun-for-me approach to exploring a character who's doing battle against the supernatural, or sometimes with the supernatural and against other scientists, depending on what the situation is. So just to give her a different set of tools rather than magic. And it's fun for me to have to obey my own rules.
What would those rules be?
Well, that this Victorian science is in place and it's working, these concepts of the ability to weigh the soul, these crazy ideas about medical science that the Victorians have, and the physical world where they believed there were kind of multiple atmospheres with an ether atmosphere, all these sorts of things that they believed in this dawn of intellectual pursuits. I wanted them to be working and functioning in my universe. And to a strange extent, that's a little bit like magic, because some of their ideas were so bizarre and so weird. And if you carry them to the full extent of if they had actually worked, some of the gadgets and consequences are quite remarkably spectacular. And so that, to me, was magical enough. And it made it kind of, gave me a kind of uniqueness to play with that I really enjoy.
I'm talking with Gail Carriger, author of Soulless and Changeless, Your books are part of the steampunk genre, as you were saying. And for listeners who've never heard about steampunk before, it's an imaginary Victorian age that features brass and copper, clockwork, and steam-powered inventions that go beyond 1800s technology. I was wondering if you had a favorite aspect about the steampunk genre that you'd like to talk about?
Well, I really love the visual side of it. To me, it's a little bit of a rebellion against the modern age where all of our technology is getting more and more hidden away in tiny little silver boxes. And one of the beauties of steampunk as a genre to write in is that your technology is sort of exposed and glorified. And you can describe and talk about and visualize these massive engines where you can see the cogs turning and you can see the belts turning around those cogs and that sort of thing. You can see the steam puffing out from underneath. And to me, that's a very luscious world to describe. And yes, it can get kind of dark and gritty and there's soot and everywhere and that sort of thing. But it's also a wonderful kind of thing to imagine, for example, taking a balloon and traveling to the moon in a balloon. That kind of a thing is pure steampunk, and it's so much fun to write.
There are events and quirks in history that you use supernatural beings to explain their causes, like high neck cravats were intended to hide neck bites. How do you get those ideas?
I think that comes from being an archaeologist. So I like to say that I write alt history, but I approach it slightly differently. I don't look at a single battle and imagine that the battle turned in the opposite direction and that the whole course of history shifted from then on. Instead, I like to look at history and the explanations that historians have come up with for certain occurrences and think, well, that's one possible explanation, but another explanation is that there were vampires helping out and that's why that happened. Or the werewolves were able to fight at night, and that's how England conquered Africa, or something like that. And I think that comes from being an archaeologist and often working in places and with areas that have no actual historical or written record. And so archaeologists spend a lot of time arguing over the causes of certain events. So we can see the event and that it happened, but why is really difficult for us to get at. And so we have the luxury in our scientific discipline of being able to come up with separate theories to explain something. And so I kind of looked at history, even though this is a known time period and we're pretty sure what happened during the Victorian era, but I can go back and look at it and be like, well, let's pretend that all we had is the physical evidence. What might explain that physical evidence from a werewolf or a vampire or a ghost perspective instead of the perspective that we currently have? And it's kind of fun to play with. It's like putting a puzzle together in a different direction.
Your novels include werewolf, vampire, ghosts, automaton, and soulless characters, but no witches, fairies, zombies, or mermaids.
Ah, and part of that has to do with the literature of the time. I draw on sort of the roots of Gothic literature, and that is where, for example, Frankenstein's monster, the automatons that I write kind of come out of that concept, and my vampires are sort of spoofs on the Victorian sexual predator vampire that you get in early Gothic literature, or even before the Victorian era, like the monk, and then my werewolves, the same thing. And so I've left open mythoses from other places, the Selkie from more Northwood Islands and that kind of thing, or the mermaids or whatever. I've sort of left them as something that so far Alexia hasn't encountered. And I'm not saying they're not there, but they haven't come up yet. And some of those are kind of more New World concepts, and some of those are more continental European concepts. And so I just haven't touched on them because they haven't become relevant to the story yet. Witches, I think, again, that has to do with the magic thing. So I don't have them because of their connection to the magical idea of the supernatural, and I rejected that for my work. So we're ever going to encounter them. And then zombies, I can neither confirm nor deny that there may or may not be zombie porcupines at some point in the series. But, yeah, I tend to also go for supernatural elements that I find comedic intrinsically. I find the idea of a vampire kind of funny because I don't know if some of us may or may not have worn fake teeth at some point during our Halloween careers, and you find if you put them in that you kind of lisp a little bit and you sometimes drool a little bit, and it seems to me that a newly made vampire would have similar problems. And of course, for the Victorians, the very idea that as a werewolf you'd have to take off your clothes in order to change shape is absolutely shocking. So both of those creatures are kind of rich minefields for comedy. So I also tend to pick and choose which supernatural creatures I'm going to include in my stories based on whether or not I think they'll be funny for that story.
Your books contain a lot of detailed information about Victorian fashion. Where do you get your information from?
There's a great and wonderful resource for women's fashion, which is referred to amongst the costuming community and those of us obsessed with clothing as the Great Big Blue Book of Victorian Fashion. I think it's English Women's Clothing from 1840 to 1880 or something like that. But it's this massive tome that has wonderful descriptions of kind of year by year what was in fashion, what the materials were, what kind of hats, all that kind of thing, mostly for women. Men are a little bit harder. It's a little harder to find a raw source for that. But I also happen to be a huge fan of the clothing of the time period. So I came to writing in this time period with a good body of knowledge just from my own research because I love the way the clothing looks.
Your newest novel, Blameless, the third in the series, releases on September 1st. What other projects are you working on?
Well, I just actually turned in the fourth one in the series, which is called Heartless. One of the strange things about being an author is that by the time one book is coming out, you usually already have the second one in and you're probably working on copy edits. So that one has just been turned into my first readers. It hasn't gone into my editor yet. And then I have a fifth one that I'm going to have to start on right after that. And I have a couple of other secret projects that I'm working on. I haven't got enough down on paper yet for them to really know whether there's any meat to them or not, so I'm not really announcing anything about those. And then I have a couple short stories and some anthologies coming out, so I'm keeping busy.
We're talking with Gail Carriger, and she's the author of the Parasol Protectorate series. Is there anything else you'd like to share about your books?
Really, the only thing that I like people to know is that they're meant to be fun and that they're meant to make people laugh, and hopefully that if I leave you with a smile, I feel like I've done my job. I feel like I want to entertain people and I want to make them feel better. So it always makes me happiest when someone comes up and says, you know, your book kept me up because I was laughing so hard. That's what I want out of life, really.
Those are the books Soulless, Changeless, and soon to be released Blameless by author Gail Carriger. Gail, can people find your information online?
Oh, yes, please do. I love hearing from people. I love being contacted. You can find me at my website, which is www.gailcarriger.com, and that's GAILCARRIGER. But if you Google Gail C, it's one of the first things that'll come up, I found out recently. But I'm also on Twitter, and I'm on Facebook. And I'll usually spend too much time in both those places.
Well, thanks so much for visiting with me today.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's been a real pleasure.